Deer Trucking Awesome. What do you think of when someone says tough? Honestly, I think of a Toyota truck. Tundra's one mean mother of a truck with a twin-turbo V6, an incredible going power, and the Tacoma claws through terrain with a taller suspension and lots of creature comforts in the cockpit. Both Toyota trucks are decked out with tons of cool features and tech you'll dig. Check them out at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The folks at Green Mountain Dental Group deserve to take some credit for those smiling Colorado sports fans around town, especially those of our DNVR listeners who've switched to Green Mountain Dental Group over the years to make them the permanent family dentist. If you schedule a cleaning, x-ray, and exam, you're going to receive a free Sonicare toothbrush from Green Mountain Dental Group located only 15 minutes from downtown Denver. That's your first pitch. Now let's play ball. Welcome into the DNVR Rockies podcast, brought to you by Strava Craft Coffee. Strava CBD coffee is going to improve the quality of your morning since it's rich in both CBD and CBG. It can be delivered to your doorstep every 2, 4, 6, or 8 weeks. Whatever you need, their CBD-infused coffee is going to have you feeling so much better, reduce those chronic headaches, joint pains, IBS, other things than that, plus zero coffee jitters if you want 3 or 4 cups a day. Now you can get 25% off your first purchase at Strava Craft Coffee when you use code DNVR25 at StravaCraftCoffee.com. I am your host, Patrick Lyons, and joining me on day 3 of Hall of Fame week is a very special guest, a very notable author. Hopefully you've already enjoyed day 1 with Manny Randau as we talked about the class of 2022, both those PED guys, the implications for voting for players like Bonds, Clemens, Sammy Sosa, Manny Ramirez, as well as Pete Rose. Where does he fit in the discussion? We do play Tacos and Tears, a very fun game with Manny. On Tuesday, Noah Yingling was on from Rocks Pile. We had the big conversation about that first class of Rockies Hall of Famers. Hey, yes, let's have a Rockies Hall of Fame. Let's get that done. And we go through the Hall of Fame ballot from the infielders' perspective. There's a few on the ballot. We break down each and every guy. But today, we have the author of The Case for Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame, The Untold and Forgotten Stories of Baseball's Home Run King from Riverdale Avenue Books. It's K.P. Wee, who's also the author of Tom Candiotti, A Life of Knuckleballs, as well as a book on the 1988 Los Angeles Dodgers, aptly titled The 1988 Dodgers, Reliving the Championship Season. He also has a biography that he co-wrote with John Cangelosi, The Improbable Baseball Journey of the Undersized Kid from Nowhere to World Series Champion. You should know that name. He did play for the Rockies for, about a week. But nevertheless, he's a Colorado Rocky, and we've got KP Wee on. KP, so glad to have you here on the show today. Thanks for taking out some time to discuss your novel, The Case for Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame, The Untold and Forgotten Stories of Baseball's Home Run King.
Thanks for having me, Patrick. It's great to be chatting baseball today.
It is, right? You know, there's a lockout, but guess what? We're going to be making the news today.
That's perfect. Love it.
It is. Now, you're born in Singapore. You live in Canada now. So since this is a Rockies program, got to start off right away, meatball right down the middle. Did you find yourself pulling for Larry Walker a little bit there, the son of a British Columbia, right? Your now home province. Did you pull for him in his 10th and final year for the Hall of Fame?
Now, Patrick, you always want to see great players get their due, you know, in Cooperstown. And obviously, up in Canada here in British Columbia, where Larry Walker is from, you know, people were always pulling for him, wondering why he didn't make it in the Hall of Fame. I think it was great to get to see, you know, like a, you know, great player like Larry get in the Hall of Fame. So that was fantastic. And he made it in his 10th and final season on the ballot. Great career, obviously, with the Rockies, and started out with Montreal, and got to play in the World Series with St. Louis near the end of his career. So I think, you know, it was great that to see him get his due and make it in his final year on the ballot.
And as a guy in Larry Walker who, besides being great at baseball, loved hockey, much like yourself, you've also written, you know, I didn't talk about all the hockey books that you've written, but you're a hockey and baseball guy. You're a two-sport threat, KP. And you did write a really cool book called Oh So Close, all about, you know, Canada's great teams where they were so close to winning a championship. And of course, Larry's 1994 Montreal Expos team, who had the best record in baseball before the 1994 strike, the last time we had a work stoppage. The symmetry is very interesting. The whole team ended up blowing up, so we'll never know what could have been. But, you know, as you said, Larry has quite the legacy up in Canada.
Absolutely. You know, in Montreal, like, people think the 94 Expos should have won the World Series. I know you made a reference to that book I wrote years ago, but you know, it's cool to think about that, but I think you got to play the games to determine who the champions will be. And I don't necessarily agree with the idea that the 1994 Expos would have won, because, you know, just you just never know, right? Look, injuries could have happened, then the other team I've gotten hot. But you know, again, I guess for Walker himself, getting to play in the postseason with the Rockies in the following year, 95, right? They made it against the Atlanta Braves. That was an exciting time for Rockies fans, I'm sure. I mean, series could have gone either way between the Rockies and the Atlanta Braves. But, you know, it's just a hard thing to do, you know, to win in any sport. So I think, you know, great that Walker got a chance to playing the postseason, you know, a few times, you know, with the Rockies, and like I said earlier, later on in his career with the St. Louis Cardinals. So I mean, but if you kind of talk to a lot of players or former players, they feel like, oh, you know, we should have won this year, we should have won that year, we could have, we should have, you know, that's kind of what they think about, I'm sure. And you know, whether it was the 94 Expos or the 95 Colorado Rockies or whichever team, even the 2002 San Francisco Giants. You know, just I think sometimes when you don't get a chance to win, you know, some of those losses stick out. And in the case of a labor stoppage, that was the first year that, you know, the expanded playoffs were set to take place, and a lot of teams had legitimate shots at it. It's, you know, so hopefully, you know, the current situation with the labor stoppage would end soon, but you just never know.
I got to ask, have you, before we get into our conversation about your book that came out last May, have you gotten a chance to come to America to see Cooperstown and ever go, you know, to the Hall of Fame?
That's actually one of the things on my bucket list, so to speak.
All right.
So yeah, that Cooperstown is definitely something I want to check out. You know, obviously at this time it's a little bit tricky with what's going on, but yeah, like you know, down the road, definitely it's an amazing place, obviously, and that definitely one of the things I would like to do for sure.
Oh, that would definitely be a very exciting thing, an exciting trip to go on. All right, so Barry Bonds, as I mentioned, again, the case for Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame by Riverdale Avenue Books that you published last year. Barry Bonds, look, we all know his on-field resume, right? Home run leader, 762 career home runs, 7-time MVP, 14-time All-Star, 8-time Gold Glove Award winner. That's not disputable. I think when you look at his resume and you run down that list, you have to think about the perspective of from the youngest generation of fans who are now watching the game and are learning about the history. I think baseball fans are probably the most in touch with the history of the game of all the sports. Basketball fans do a really good job. I think they're very knowledgeable. Same thing with some hockey fans as well. But if you're a young baseball fan, you have to be scratching your head trying to figure out this double standard of how someone like Barry Bonds, who's one of the 10 best players of all time and the greatest left fielder of all time, according to Jaws, and though he played in the PED era, there are others of that generation that were not kept out of the hall for similar transgressions, regardless of the evidence, but tops among those being the man who reigned over the entire era, Commissioner Bud Selig, who got in immediately once he retired. So that can be a bit confusing probably for some of the younger fans there, how there's somewhat of a double standard, and there's a lot of double standards when it comes to Barry Bonds, as you very well articulate in your book.
Absolutely. You touched on that perfectly, Patrick. It is a bit of a double standard if you think about it. And it would be kind of foolish to think that there's nobody in the Hall of Fame right now who took PEDs. Or if I say it properly, it's kind of foolish to think that there's nobody like completely clean in the Hall of Fame. And it goes back to, you know, if you watched Ken Burns' baseball documentary, The 10th Inning, Washington Post columnist Tom Boswell said on camera that he once saw a player who's now in the Hall of Fame drink something in a clubhouse, which the player called a Jose Canseco milkshake, quote unquote. And since Boswell was talking about this during a segment about steroids, he clearly took that to mean the so-called milkshake was full of PEDs. You know, that player, apparently, according to Boswell, is in the Hall of Fame. And if what he says is true, is that a PED user was elected to the Hall of Fame by baseball writers who currently believe that the world will end, you know, if a PED user is elected to the Hall. So, and if you talk to, other writers, they will tell the same thing. They believe that there are already PED users in the Hall of Fame. And you mentioned, of course, Bud Selig, who oversaw the whole thing, the whole era. And you talk about, let's say, managers who benefited from this. And just to bring up a couple of examples, Joe Torre, Tony La Russa, they're in the Hall of Fame. So why are we punishing, let's say, only Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens, who's obviously linked to Bonds in terms of, this PED controversy, and it's their last year on the ballot.
Our members here at thednvr.com, you get a bigger beer when you come down to the bar on the corner of Colfax and York in Denver. We got drink specials 3 to 6 every day, appetizer discounts. Those discounts on the drinks, as I said, with the bigger beer, you know that it's only 50 cents for your first month. If you're not already signed up to thednvr.com, your annual membership gets you a free shirt at the DNVR Locker, dnvrlocker.com. Of course, we've got watch parties going on all the time, Nuggets, Avs, Rams, and Buffs for college basketball. It's a fantastic time at the DNVR bar. You know Breckenridge Brewery is what's on tap on the corner of Colfax and York. So we're talking Avalanche Ale, Strawberry Sky, Vanilla Porter. Cool thing that they are doing with Breckenridge Brewery is they are donating a large part of their profits to the National Parks Conservation Association this year to help prevent those forest fires. They're also got the 15 can samplers of the Breckenridge Brewery's Good Company Hard Seltzer, an easy choice for a great company. And yeah, now that the holidays are over, guess what? You want to turn over a new leaf? Yet you're still a little bit beat up, you're still a little bit tired. So Lightshade, Colorado's premier dispensary, has the solution, and it's Wana. So no matter when you take them, Wana Optimals Fast Asleep Gummies will leave you feeling rested and refreshed in the morning. That over-the-counter stuff is going to knock you out with powerful drugs that leave you in a fog, and you don't want that. So Wana's carefully calibrated formula contains 10 milligrams of CBD, just a hint of THC that will get the eyelids feeling heavy, 5 to 15 minutes. And in 0 minutes, you can order Wana Optimals Fast Asleep Gummies at lightshade.com and get 25% off with the code DNVR. Use code DNVR at any of Lightshade's 10 Denver metro areas. So as you said, KP, this idea about performance-enhancing drugs, obviously this is a huge part of the conversation. Like I understand those folks who say, no, these people should not be let into the Hall of Fame or given a pass. They need to, you know, serve some kind of penance and what have you. And I think in many ways, Bonds and Clemens, those guys have already served that for having to wait this long. But what we're trying to do here is to show more of the conversation and more of things that are behind the scenes. The fact that, again, with Commissioner Selig being in, we know sports is a business that's irrefutable, right? And PEDs were great for business in the 90s and early 2000s. The millionaires, the ballplayers, yes, we know that they benefited. But the billionaires who ran the teams in the league, they benefited even more. That's why it was allowed. Yes, we know it was illegal, but it was allowed within the game. Babe Ruth, he drank alcohol during Prohibition, which was illegal outside of baseball. But inside, who cares? Hank Aaron admitted to using greenies, right? And there's a double standard. And, you know, we're getting into breaking it down. And as you said, Bonds and Clemens, they are linked forever. So a lot of the things that we say about Bonds, in many ways, they probably, you know, can be said about Clemens too, to a certain degree.
Absolutely. And Patrick, you mentioned Babe Ruth. Even Babe Ruth has ties to steroids. Reportedly, he injected himself with a substance drawn out of sheep's testicles, if you believe that. That was reported back then. And even steroids, that's not a recent problem, because Tom House, who played in the 70s, and he was a longtime pitching coach for the Texas Rangers, he admitted to using steroids and claimed that the use of steroids was widespread during that time in the 70s, right? You mentioned amphetamines. Amphetamine use started in the 1940s, from what I understand. It was widespread, in the 50s, 60s, 70s. So it is a bit of a double standard. And if you think about not just performance-enhancing drugs, but even like Whitey Ford, the Yankees Hall of Fame pitcher, he did something to the baseballs. He cut it with his wedding ring, put stuff on the baseball to make it move. And, Gaylord Perry, a more recent example. So, I think, doesn't matter what era it is. In the generations before Barry Bonds, before Roger Clemens, players tried to get an edge on their opponents. And that's been the case ever since the start of the history of baseball. So it is unfortunate that, the winningest right-handed pitcher since World War II, Roger Clemens, is being singled out, being punished. Barry Bonds, we've talked about his accolades, his numbers. You could make an argument that Bonds was the greatest player of all time, the GOAT, so to speak, in his sport. So it's just unfortunate that, again, we're singling them out, or writers are singling them out because of their numbers. And you hear the argument that, of course they're going to get singled out is because they're breaking records or setting records and stuff like that. But again, it just doesn't seem very fair when you think about it.
I love baseball history, and I love how it's preserved throughout MLB and throughout the game. And again, Cooperstown, the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. But if you know anything about the history of baseball, it's that cheating, as you touched on there, KP, cheating has been a part of baseball history. And so if you understand that context, it's easier to avoid that holier-than-thou philosophy. I can remember specifically when it came out, where Alex Rodriguez had taken steroids, and I go, they're all doing it. Like, that was the final straw. We already knew about Bonds. We already knew about Clemens. Mark McGwire is one of my favorite players of all time. He had already come out, that information was already there. And Jason Giambi, I think by that point, the Mitchell report information had been leaked. But when it was A-Rod, when it was the best player in the game, who I wasn't a huge A-Rod fan, but it was just this idea that with the best player in the game is doing it at a time in which baseball's trying to say, no, 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 don't do that. That is all the information I need to say, you know what? They probably are all doing it. And so therefore that cleans the slate almost to a degree. And it was heartbreaking to have that realization, but in very short amount of time, I mean, it was probably a year or two. Yeah, I stayed away from the game. And I think even in 2007, 2008, I didn't even go to a ball game because that hurt me. But again, realizing the history of the game and contextualizing it better, can't be holier than thou and just say, you know what, this is a part of baseball's history and Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens are not the devil.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, fans like yourself were kind of turned off by this whole thing, but this whole scandal or this whole era, if you will. But as you put it at the beginning, it is a business and it is entertainment. We want, you know, as fans, we want to see players hit the long ball, right? You know, ESPN or whatever network isn't going to show a bunt, right? You know, we all love to see balls flying out of the ballpark and, you know, home runs, strikeouts for pitchers, you know, those were more, I guess, sexy, if you will. Right. So it's unfortunate in the fact that, you know, I guess these baseball heroes, I don't want to use that word, but, you know, you get what I mean. Sure. But these heroes that we grew up with in our childhood, you know, we find out, oh, wait a minute, he did what? Again, I guess the thing is we shouldn't put athletes or anybody on a pedestal. We just need to understand that they have this compete level that, you know, I guess it's hard to understand if you're not an athlete yourself, that they have this compete level that if you're the best, you want to be the best and you're going to do whatever it takes to stay at that level, right? And the thing is, you know, with the Hall of Fame specifically, I think that I speak for a lot of people when I say that the Hall of Fame is a museum, is not a shrine, right? We have racists in the Hall of Fame. We have, you know, abusers in the Hall of Fame. It's not a place for saints. It's not a shrine. It is a piece of, in this case, baseball history. And it is a museum. You know, it's players that put up the numbers and they were the best of their era or even the best of all time in the case of among the best of all time in the case of Bonds and Clemens. They should be in the Hall of Fame. And again, you know, this thing with cheating, who's doing it, who's not doing it, we'll never know. You know, we can't assume that, you know, certain players didn't do it, or we, on the other hand, we can't just say everybody cheated. You know, maybe Jose Canseco was right when he said, I don't know what percentage he used, but more than half of the players were on something, you know, back then. I mean, that's what the game was. And you alluded to it earlier, you know, it's just that the billionaire owners saw a great thing happening. They were making a lot of money. So within the context of the sport, it was not cheating. Everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of players are on the same playing field, so to speak, because, you know, certain, you look at the Mitchell report, right? There were a lot of pitchers who were using PEDs, a lot of hitters, and the Mitchell report didn't even cover all of baseball. You know, it was there were select teams that I guess were busted, or certain players were busted, but not it didn't cover everybody. It was just maybe unfortunate that only certain players were singled out in that, you know. It's just again, you know, I think it's important to understand why do we like to watch baseball. Well, it's because it's entertainment. We want to see the greatest athletes perform at their best, maybe they use whatever, but that's been, you know, that has been the case from the start of baseball history. You know, athletes want to have that edge, and they do whatever it takes to, you know, to win or to hit that home run or to get that hit.
Yeah, look no further than the Houston Astros, because all those people are, other than Carlos Beltran, who's been the one left on the outside, but they're all still in baseball. They're still doing their thing in various places. So if as crazy as that may have all been, and it was, we can understand the history of baseball and how that works. And so you did a good job of acknowledging, great job of acknowledging Bonds's transgressions and the acknowledgments of your book, The Case for Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame, The Untold and Forgotten Stories of Baseball's Home Run King. But what you do and what you state is your goal is just to inform voters on Bonds, since this is his last go around, like it was for Larry Walker. And we had a gentleman here in our region, Manny Randau, who was a guest previously on the DNVR Rockies podcast, where he helped make that push for Larry Walker. And so, you know, you talk about the double standard, and you talk about, you know, voters really giving him a fair shot. Like when it comes to the conversation about his postseason play, my take on postseason play is, all right, even if, you know, you're not as good as you were in the regular season, which was the case a little bit for Bonds, that shouldn't be counted against a player. I think great postseason play should benefit a player, but it just shouldn't penalize a player.
Absolutely, Patrick. And the thing, of course, is people like to bring up the fact that he couldn't throw out Sid Bream in 1992 NLCS, or, you know, he couldn't get to the ball in the World Series in 2002 in Game 6 against the Angels. You know, great players have, quote-unquote, melted down in the playoffs. You know, it's just that in that era in baseball, not that many teams make the postseason. And if you – I actually did a little research on this for the book, but I think if I got it correctly, in the first 14 seasons for Bonds in San Francisco, the Giants were either first or second like 10 times, which is incredible if you think about it, right? So being first or second in the division, like 10 out of the first 14 years or whatever it was. But again, in those days, if you're in second place, you didn't make the playoffs if you weren't the wild card team. And back in those days, there was either no wild card or just one wild card, you know, participants. So the context, you know, is important in the sense that during that time period, it was difficult to make the playoffs. And even the greatest players, you know, had, you know, difficult times when postseason play comes, and you shouldn't penalize them. And I touched on it in the book, but Jeff Bagwell, Biggio, Craig Biggio, right? They had multiple playoff failures in back-to-back-to-back years. Frank Thomas, even Edgar Martinez. Edgar Martinez is remembered for that double against the Yankees, but then in the next series, he hit under 200. And I know that in some other playoff series down the road, Edgar didn't, you know, put out great numbers. And, you know, those are not brought up, you know, against those great players. It's just that it seems like perhaps, again, it's this double standard because Bonds was known to be standoffish with much of the media. So I think that, you know, it seemed like the media liked to magnify his failures more. That's my take on it. But, you know, great players, you know, have even the greatest players, they do sometimes fail to deliver in the playoffs. And I just ran a few examples right there, you know, in that same era. So, yeah, absolutely, Patrick, you shouldn't count that against him.
I think all those guys you mentioned too that struggled, they at least had a little bit of benefit of lineup support. You know, you go back and look through, you know, who else Barry Bonds had either protecting him in the lineup or around him. You know, Jeff Kent approached his level a little bit, but again, that's towards the end. Matt Williams, Bobby Bonilla when he was with Pittsburgh. Even if you talk about you know, some of the pitchers like a Bill Swift, Doug Drabeck, Jason Schmidt, like these guys maybe aren't even in the Hall of very good. And so there's a lot of pressure that was heaped on Bonds, and he was ascended to another level of the spotlight that we really don't get to see in modern era. And I want to tell you about what the numbers, what he did in 2002 in that World Series, because they are, and you know them, I know you know them, KP, but for everyone listening at home, these numbers are astounding. But I first got to tell you about Ball Aerospace and Technology, especially because they're hiring right now for $27 an hour. They're looking for folks to work on their manufacturing plant in Golden. Production technicians, just go to jobs.ball.com and search for Golden. You can get comprehensive insurance, active the day of hire, 401k retirement, stock purchase ownership program, annual bonus potential. Look, so many benefits for working for a great company here in Colorado like Ball. So just text Golden to 77222 and you'll get linked to their open positions, or go directly to jobs.ball.com and search for Golden. And take your hard-earned paycheck and buy yourself a home with the expertise and support of Chevalier Mortgage. Chevalier Mortgage's ultimate goal, just to take the stress out of buying and refinancing. That's probably the biggest hurdle so many new homeowners have, is it is a stressful experience. But guess what? Chevalier Mortgage strives to give their borrowers options with their full financial picture in mind, with the highest level of integrity, always putting borrowers first. They got a cool perk right now for DNVR listeners. Visit them at dnvrmortgage.com and enter to win a free DNVR shirt or hat of your choice when you do. Most importantly, get set up with a free consultation to discuss all your options, even if you already own a home. Guess what? Prices are going up, so there's a bubble out there. You got natural equity in your home. Don't be afraid to contact them as well. Contact Virginia directly at 303-257-6578 or visit www.dnvrmortgage.com. Michael Chevalier, NMLS number 1931006. Virginia Chevalier, NMLS number 1910631. We're on to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is celebrating with a huge odds boost for new customers. Counting down to Super Bowl 56, you can get 56-1 odds on any team. That's right, any team, 56-1 odds. Bet just $5 and get 280 in free bets if your team wins. Not a new customer? That's fine, because you can still get in on the action with same game parlays. You can buy multiple bets from the same game for an even bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. And best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code DNVR to get 56-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet just $5 and win 280 in free bets if your team wins. That's promo code DNVR for 56-1 odds at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, Colorado only, new customers only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. In the 2002 World Series, besides hitting 4 home runs, 6 RBI, no one was on base in front of him, Bonds was walked 13 times. Almost half of his plate appearances, 13 out of 30 plate appearances, he walked. He had a 700 on-base percentage. Unbelievable.
You know, managers were just afraid to pitch to him. And same with pitchers, right? And you look at Babe Ruth. I remember reading a quote from back in the day when Babe Ruth was in a World Series. John McGraw, the New York Giants, were facing the Yankees. And John McGraw was quoted as saying, like, we're not afraid of Babe Ruth. We're just going to pitch to him. He's no better than, like, you know, the fifth best hitter in the National League, right? We're going to pitch to him. We're just going to throw him slow stuff, get him out, right? You know, maybe it was a different era, obviously, but managers, pitchers weren't afraid of Babe Ruth, Ted Williams. Another guy who struggled in his only World Series appearance, Ted Williams, hit 200 in the 1946 World Series for the Red Sox. But yeah, Bonds was just, they just walked him and walked him and walked him. They were afraid of him. They didn't want Bonds to beat them. And you mentioned earlier, Patrick, that the fact that Bonds didn't have a lot of protection in the lineup, and that's why they kept walking him. And the thing is, you can imagine it's difficult to be standing at the plate knowing that they aren't going to pitch to you, right? Like even, you know, the best hitters of that era, you can't imagine them just taking walk after walk after walk. I know I referenced this in the book as well, but Jose Canseco once was walked like 7 consecutive times, and then the eighth time, he didn't want to walk anymore. He just kept swinging and he struck himself out. But you know, you have to be that patient to, or have the discipline to be up there, knowing that they're not going to pitch you, and just take it, right?
And Bonds, and that's not Bonds. Bonds' style was he could be patient enough to wait, you know, which is his skill, and he should be credited for. And you know, and this is where we can shift the conversation to his relationship with the media or his teammates and things of that nature. But you know what? Him walking is saying, all right, the next guy on deck, I feel more comfortable taking the free base and saying, hey, whether it's Kent, whether it was someone like who had a breakout year in Rich Aurelia, hey, you're up behind me. So I'm gonna give you a shot. I don't need to do everything. I'm going to give you that opportunity because I think we have a better chance to win if I'm not, you know, making an out, 70% of the time. I'll take the walk. The on-base percentage is a key figure. So, you know, you mentioned in the book about the tumultuous relationship with the media, and I think people would maybe be a little surprised to know where that originated from. And it happened to do really long before Barry Bonds was even drafted and was a professional baseball player.
Right. As the story goes, Bobby Bonds, Barry's father, you know, Bobby Bonds was a superstar in his own right. And, the media wasn't kind to him. And Barry was a young kid, and he saw this in the clubhouse because he was brought into the Giants clubhouse when Bobby Bonds was a player. And you know, Barry apparently learned from Bobby Bonds and learned from Willie Mays, his godfather, you know, that being the best player in the game matters, you know, understanding the game matters, but you know, you're not gonna help yourself if you're nice to the media or if you're nice to, you know, the reporters that want to write trash about you, right? So unfortunately, he learned that, as the story goes, he learned that from a young age from his father and from the great Willie Mays, who wasn't known to be kind to the media either. But it's that's how it started. And I've listened to an interview that Barry Bonds did on a podcast somewhere where he explained, he was not, he was not like an outgoing person. Like he kind of made an analogy of like a computer nerd or a computer person who just wants to do his job, doesn't want to talk to other people, kind of like an introvert, if you will, right?
Yes.
So for him, the way he explained it, for him, it was like playing baseball was a kind of a performance. It was entertaining the fans, and he didn't want to do anything that was going to distract him from playing the game, like giving his best performance on the field. And the way he talked about it was like concentrating for 3 hours or 4 hours during the game, and he didn't want to be distracted by reporters or anybody, you know, wanting something from him, because the way he saw it, his job description was to entertain on the field, and that's kind of what he wanted to be judged on, based on how he did on the field. And again, you know, athletes aren't not all athletes are like that, but you know, but they're not unique in a sense that there are other superstars who kind of were similar in that sense, but maybe we don't get to hear about it. Like I know a great example about the 1988 Dodgers, Kirk Gibson, right? Apparently he was similar in a way that, you know, when it was game day, if he didn't want to talk to the media, he would just tell the reporters to go away because he had a job to do, and that was, you know, to help the Dodgers win that night, you know. So, I mean, that was just one example, but you can imagine that there are a lot of athletes like that who, you know, I guess if you want to use the word quote-unquote jerk, if you want, I guess it seems like the double standard is that Barry Bonds was always singled out. You know, if you talk about another sport like Michael Jordan, nobody wanted to write anything bad about Michael Jordan, but, you know, we've all kind of read, you know, things like that, but it was just underreported, if you will, because not a lot of people wanted to, you know, offend Michael Jordan. That, you know, the star athletes, a lot of them seem to have that kind of mindset. Well, you know, if I'm gonna give my best, I don't want to be talking to reporters, you know, during my quote unquote like free time or non on the court time or off the field time. So again, it's just that unfortunately, in the case of Barry Bonds, that seemed to be very much well publicized. Like, you know, he didn't get along with the media, he was standoffish, or the fact that he had like 4 or 5 lockers in the Giants clubhouse. And again, there are other players, or there have been other players who were like that, but you don't hear about it because, you know, it was Barry Bonds that is a big name that's doing that. So he gets talked about. You know, the example I wrote in the book was, you know, one example was like Brett Boone in Seattle. He apparently had the same deal. He had like 3 lockers or whatever the case is, but you don't really hear about it because, you know, Brett Boone is not Barry Bonds.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that with the extra lockers, because I think a lot of fans might be surprised to know that this is kind of common practice. Now, maybe not 4 or 5 exactly, but, you know, here in Colorado, Arenado, Ian Desmond, Daniel Murphy, Trevor Story, they all had a second locker. They all had one, you know, no nameplate on it. It was just extra equipment. They would typically be all next to each other, so they had a locker on each side of them. Only one of them was theirs, but you get the idea that, hey, they had extra space to them. And so it's commonplace, a lot more so, but you're right. It was just focused in on Bonds. And, you know, I might be coming off as like a huge Bonds guy. I'm not. But what I am is one that's in favor of seeing the whole picture and getting evidence and getting to the truth of what's real. And I also don't have a problem with him being in the Hall of Fame in the first place. This is for anyone that might not understand the whole story. As you said, with Michael Jordan, we got to see that firsthand, you know, right at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020 with The Last Dance, that great documentary on Jordan, and how, you know, there was a lot more going on behind the scenes, I think, than people realize. And whereas with Bonds, people would publicize that. And yet in an era only like 10 years earlier, it wasn't publicized for a guy like Jordan. You reference in the book that, you know, only in 2020, Sam Smith, a sports writer who covered the Bulls, you know, had a story stating that one time on the plane, Michael Jordan said, "Hey, Horace Grant, you don't get to eat." Like, literally told, you know, the flight attendant, you don't get to eat. You had a bad game. Don't feed him. But it didn't get reported because, as the players would say, you can't say that about Michael Jordan, but you could about Barry Bonds. And whether we like it or not, I think that impacts some voters, and I think that impacts some fans when they think, Barry Bonds, they just shoo him to the side and say, nope, leave him out. There's more to this than meets the eye.
Right. And yeah, and likewise, Patrick, thanks for referencing that. Likewise, you know, Bonds has done things that, that showed a gentle side to him, but he just didn't want people to know about it, right? And that's covered in the book. But yeah, absolutely, that situation with Michael Jordan, you know, it took years before that writer actually talked about it publicly. But it just goes to show that there are a lot of things that don't get reported with other star athletes or other athletes in general, because you, either you don't want to upset that particular athlete, or maybe the athlete in question is not a big name. So, but it seems like with Bonds, it just, you know, we hear more of the negative things than the positive things that he's done. And also, you know, for me, when I wrote this book, it's also, you know, I don't think it's a way to change anybody's mind, but just to get that story out there, because, you know, as sports fans, once we are set on something, you know, we have our own takes. We're not going to, you know, listen to the other side if we're convinced we're right. So I don't have any, I don't have a goal of like changing people's minds, but I just want to get that story, those stories out there, and just kind of show both sides of it, or show the other side that is not, you know, not told as much or is forgotten. Yeah. And, you know, and I was not a Giants fan, right? Was not a Pirates fan, but, you know, it's just
Boston Red Sox fan.
That's right. And you alluded to earlier, Patrick, you know, whether it was Doug Drabag or Bill Swift or Jason Schmidt, John Burkett, those guys maybe had one great year, one or two great years. But the Pirates or the Giants, you know, the second half of Bonds' career, they never had, you know, that kind of outstanding pitching that you later saw with the Giants teams of like the 2010s, right? They won 3 World Series titles in that decade. So it's just, you know, I guess the good thing for San Francisco Giants fans is, you know, even though they didn't win a championship during that whole era with Bonds, at least they got to see one of the greatest players of all time patrol that field for them, you know, for that time period.
Yeah, too bad Tim Lincecum was only about 15 years old in 2002. Otherwise, maybe that rotation would have gone a little bit further. But as you talk about here, and this dovetails nicely to the kind of the final piece of the untold story of Barry Bonds, is the relationship he had with teammates. And again, being an introverted player, you know, that rubbed some of his teammates the wrong way, but not everyone felt like, you know, it was one against 24, you know, as was reported on. You know, you go back and you look and you see his 700th home run, and he steps on home plate and his teammates were not there to greet him at home plate. And you would think, well, obviously that is very indicative of how all of his teammates felt. But you spoke to some of his teammates who didn't feel that way, who wanted to be out there for him and wanted to support him and even apologize for it afterwards, because look, they were maybe outnumbered, or look, they didn't have the seniority to say, hey, this is our teammate. Like he's a part of our club. We're just going to let him, you know, go out there and not celebrate him. You know, there were players that had a good relationship with him. And you touch on that in the book.
Right. Yeah. And Dustin Moore was a fourth outfielder. I believe it was a 2004 Giants team. He was there for 1 year, and I had a lengthy conversation with Dustin Moore. Again, not an all-star, you know, not a household name, let's say, but, you know, a fourth outfielder, and Bonds took the time to help Dustin Moore out and took him down for extra hitting one time because Dustin was, you know, struggling, and Dustin Moore didn't ask Barry Bonds to help him. Bonds just offered and just took him down to the batting cage and did some extra hitting. And, you know, Moore was one of the guys that wanted to go out there at home plate to greet Bonds for the 700 home run. But he was told specifically by some of the players who had seniority on, you know, on that team, like, you better not go out there. You know, that kind of stuff happens. But if you looked at, you know, maybe it was the 70th home run or the 71st home run, the one that broke the single season all-time home run record. So some of those other milestones, you know, his teammates ran out to high-five him, greet him. So it was, you know, it was perhaps again, some members of the media trying to cherry pick one incident when nobody came out to greet him. But there were other, you know, important home runs, or, you know, those milestone record breaking home runs where his teammates did come out and congratulate him. So yeah, it's just, and we can all, you know, find those on YouTube, those clips. It was just, again, just unfortunate that it happens, you know, in every walk of life, right? Whether it was, let's say, somebody saying hi to Barry Bonds, a teammate saying hi to Barry Bonds, and he maybe didn't acknowledge the teammate one day. But that happens in all walks of life, you know. Yeah. I say hi to the coworker, he or she just ignores me for whatever reason. Okay, life goes on. I mean, you know, that it's just, again, we as sports fans, we tend to treat athletes as heroes or put them on a pedestal, whereas they're just humans like you and me. You know, could be having a bad day or could be moody one day, just don't want to talk to people that day. It's, you know, just don't take it personally, I guess. But that happens in the clubhouse as well, in the locker room, right? If there are 25 players, you know, they're not going to get along every day. You know, not everybody's going to be friends, but, you know, they all have to kind of pull for each other to do well. So if, let's say, some teammates wanted him to fail, you know, then that affects the team. So, I agree. It wasn't the case of 1 versus 24, like some writers pointed out. It wasn't like that, no.
And that ties in really nicely with an incident that happened with Jeff Kent, where, okay, they got into it a little bit, but why they got into it wasn't like widely reported. And yet it involves a party that's currently a National League manager right now in the game. And that's Bonds standing up for another teammate. That's why he and Jeff Kent got into their little scrap.
Yeah, that's right. What's forgotten or underreported was the fact that Bonds was supporting David Bell, their third baseman, and Kent was apparently yelling at David Bell because of, I guess, a mistake that Bell had made on the field. And Bonds was sticking up for David Bell, like, you know, like, don't get into David Bell's face, right? Or, yeah. And Kent didn't like that. And another guy who, you know, who gets a benefit of the doubt, in the sense that he and Bonds were very much alike. Kent was also moody and made some offensive comments to reporters that was published in the papers, but nobody remembers or talks about it, right? I guess it was a motorcycle incident that he had.
That too, that, yes.
That
he gets a pass for an indiscretion that an African American ball player, is probably going to get raked over the coals unfairly.
Yeah, and there was another incident where Kent didn't acknowledge another teammate when they ran to each other at a daycare for their kids. That was reported by a writer in San Francisco, but, you know, that gets glossed over. It's just, you know, sure, like, Bonds was surly, was not friendly to the media, but there are other players like that, other teammates like that. It's just, we just only get to hear about this with Bonds and less with other, I guess, less talented members of that team. It's, I guess, because Barry Bonds is Barry Bonds, because people wanted to pick on him because, you know, he was a superstar.
Yeah, you can read all about that in KP's book from Riverdale Avenue Books, The Case for Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame, The Untold and Forgotten Stories of Baseball's Home Run King, and also the KP We podcast, where you interviewed Dustin Moore, a guy who played with the Colorado Rockies here in Denver. So there is that connection. Same thing with John Cangelosi. He finished up his career in Colorado. He also had some nice things where he was taken care of by Bonds, you know, back when they were in Pittsburgh. So you know, Bonds has been, you know, made into this really bad guy. And okay, even if he isn't Hall of Fame worthy, as you know, we want, as you said, players are put on a pedestal and we want Hall of Fame humans in the Hall of Fame, but we have to be honest and say, okay, there's no such thing as that. There really isn't. And when you think of all of this bigger picture and you go into so much more detail, it's very impressive, you know, getting a chance to read your novel, but all about Barry Bonds and the full picture. We've barely even scratched the surface, I feel, on a guy who there's been a lot of double standards for and is currently right now, I don't know if you've noticed, I don't know if you've been following along with Ryan Thibodeau and the Hall of Fame draft tracker, but as of Sunday morning, Bonds is currently sitting at 77.5%, Clemens at 76.3%. Interestingly enough, I think last year was the first time Bonds had gotten more votes than Clemens. So they've always been like next to each other by like 2 to 4 votes. And so Clemens was dropped off of John Heyman's ballot, as well as Christina Carl's ballot, the founder of Baseball Prospectus. And so right now, as it stands, he's got the votes to get in. We know the private ballots that haven't gone out yet usually are a little bit more conservative. And so it'll be close. KP, what do you think? Is Bonds going to get in this year?
Well, Patrick, if you read what others have written about this Hall of Fame tracker, the writers who are more conservative, yeah, like those are the guys that, or those are the writers that, you know, typically didn't vote for Bonds or Clemens. So if you believe those articles that are out there, now it seems like both Bonds and Clemens will fall short. But again, you know, it would be a shame. But, you know, I guess if you believe that the Hall of Fame is a museum and not a shrine and that the best players should get in, then you keep your fingers crossed.
Have you thought about, if he doesn't get in this year, if I don't know if it's 2022, I forget what the first year is that he's going to be eligible. It could be next year. So at the end of this year, he's on the Today's Era committee. I'm not sure when he's first eligible for that, but could you see him getting in his first time on one of these veteran committees? Like, do you think his peers are going to want to vote him in and ultimately want to hang out with him? Because that's an element that doesn't really get discussed about these veterans committees is, hey, if we vote this guy in, now we got to hang around with him. Do we want that, you know?
Well, yeah, that's a great point. Now, I guess you have to kind of think about who's going to be on the committee, because, you know, in recent years, we've seen, you know, people get elected by these veteran committees, and it seemed like there was, you know, a big supporter there to kind of sway the votes or sway the, you know, the voting members of the committee.
Harold Baines, we're talking about you, buddy.
Not to get into that too much. It's just, I guess you hope that you know that, whether it's Bonds or Clemens, both of them, you hope that they get their due, you know, that their recognition, and what, 7 MVP awards for Bonds, 7 Cy Youngs for Clemens. You got to have them in the hall in Cooperstown. So when I get to go and visit Cooperstown, I hope to see their plaques in there. But yeah, if it goes down to the veterans committee, hopefully that they have a strong support. And again, I think if you listen to current players, right, current players, they don't have a problem with putting Bonds in or Clemens in, because you know, for players today, they know that hitting a baseball that far or throwing, you know, 90 plus 100 plus mile per hour pitches, that's not easy. The current players know that. If it were up to the current players, those two would be in for sure. But we'll just have to see what these veteran committees do, you know, in the event that Bonds and Clemens do not get in on this 10th and final year on the ballot.
KP, I think we sold a couple books today. I'm hoping so. I'm hoping that was a small part of the goal for today's show and interview and conversation. So feel free to take an opportunity to go ahead and plug away anything you would like for people to check out for all things KPWE. Where should they be looking?
Well, thanks, Patrick. Amazon would be the place to find my books. And, this one about Barry Bonds, as you mentioned, came out last year. So if you're a baseball fan, I think that you should check it out. I wrote a book about the 1988 Dodgers, one of the Rockies, rivals in the National League West. That book's out there as well. John Cangelosi, his biography, a former Rocky, for I guess half a season, and his last year in the big leagues. And Amazon.com is where you can find those books, or your favorite online retail bookstore. So thanks for supporting me, and it's great to chat baseball any time of the year, any day of the week, Patrick.
Especially in the off season when we don't have the news and during a lockout. I'll leave a link in this podcast description too, so you can head on over to Amazon, pick up a copy for you or a friend, all about the untold story about Barry Bonds' case as one of baseball's greatest Hall of Famers, if not the, or rather greatest home run hitters of all time. So you can follow KP at KPWE. Make sure you're following his podcast as well. I'm at Patrick D. Lyons. You can follow us for all Rockies and baseball content at DNVR_Rockies on Twitter. And, well, for DNVR Sports, you know what they say, momentum, it's only as good as tomorrow's podcast. So I'll talk to you then.